the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Okay, welcome back to the Sports Coaching Podcast. It has been an incredibly long time since we've published an episode, just over a year. Many reasons for that. As anyone that follows my coaching career will know, I've had a year in Hong Kong, and unfortunately, just my first experience of full-time work in coaching, just didn't have the time to commit to doing the podcast really. But eventually, now I'm over in Xiamen, China. I now have the time to start this podcast again. So, incredibly excited to back, as you'll hopefully remember me from my voice. My name is Sam Holmshaw. I've been doing this podcast now for 3 years. And the whole idea of this podcast is essentially to provide a coaching platform that a coach from an absolute novice to beginner coach all the way up to an expert professional, semi-professional coach can hopefully listen to this podcast, take away some ideas of the topic, and hopefully go and apply those to their coaching practice. So without further ado, I am joined today by somebody who I think I've known just over 2.5 weeks. We had a very, very, very short time together over here in Xiamen, China, coaching. We did one session together, and it was, you know, like, I don't know what that film saying is. You see someone for the first time and you're falling in love almost. It was just a fantastic 1 hour, 30 minute session that we sort of ran together. And after a couple of beers, after a couple of sessions last week, we got talking about coaching, a bit about coaching practice, sharing our experiences. And I just knew I had to have this this guest onto the podcast today. So without further ado, and whether I've actually learned to pronounce Adu properly now, even a year out, is another topic for debate. But I'm so pleased to welcome Sam Hough onto the podcast. So, Sam, how are you doing, mate? How's life? How's things? How are you?
Hey, Sam. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Really, really excited to be the first guest on the podcast back for, it was a year, wasn't it? I think you just mentioned. So yeah, really, really happy to be here, mate. I'm really excited to talk about the topic today. And yeah, just want to sort of reiterate what you said there initially about you know, the time that we did, well, the short time we had together. It was really, you know, really, really good. You know, really, like, exciting. You know, that session was really good, and you know, looking forward to sort of obviously today's podcast, but also, you know, continuing to have a chat going forward.
Yeah, fantastic, mate. And let me ask you, for the viewers and the listeners, sorry, they won't necessarily be aware, but you flew back to England, to the UK, on Wednesday evening. I have noticed, obviously, we're talking via video call. It's really nice and refreshing to see a classic white English wall behind you. Clearly that's your mother's doing, I'm gonna guess, mate. How is it back home, and are you feeling jet lagged, or are you all okay?
Yeah, that's correct with the background for sure. So yeah, I sort of finished my time out in China, flew back to what we are now, Friday, so flew back a couple of days ago. I've only been back for a short amount of time, but it's sort of, well, I was back last Christmas, so it's obviously not been that long since I was back previous, but before that was quite a while. But obviously it's always nice to be back to, you know, to see family, see friends who obviously you've known quite a while and things like that. So I'm just excited to now be back and ready to sort of kickstart my coaching again back in the UK, and seeing sort of whether there's any similarities and differences between coaching out in China and obviously back in the UK now, because obviously, you know, I was coaching before I went out to China. But it would be interesting, you know, having been out to China quite a while now, quite a while, it'll be interesting to see again if there's any similarities in terms of the coaching, or whether it, you know, is completely different and how I will then need to adapt, if that makes sense. But yeah, overall, very, very happy to be back. Very excited, as I say, to start hitting the ground running again, really, with the coaching here.
Yeah, that's quality to hear, mate. And you know, when people sort of ask you what's, you know, sort of being English about, you won't quite understand this unless you've probably seen what I'm seeing. But just, I can appreciate a really nice, neat and tidy white wall with a little picture frame there. I can see in the corner a little, you know, vase for the light. That's exactly how my own mother would have our house as a kid. So it's you know, it's absolutely brilliant to see, mate. It just reminds me of being back home. You know, the great old north of the England, you know, Jon Snow, Game of Thrones, the north lives within me. So really, really pleased to see you, that, mate, and really happy for you. Must be an amazing feeling back home. A little bit envious myself, I've got to say. And as the listeners will probably have guessed, this is really sort of why we're, you know, the topic that we've decided to talk about today, and obviously we'll get onto that a little bit later into the next segment. But as we always do on the podcast, Sam, at first, really, it would be great just to learn a little bit more about yourself. What sort of started your passion in football? You know, what inspired you to get into coaching? And really, for this first segment, it'd just be great to hear your coaching journey across, I guess, you know, coaching in general, and specifically your coaching journey within football. You know, how did it start, and what sort of led you to where you are today, back in Preston, England, which I'm pretty sure most of our foreign listeners probably have never heard of. Fantastic place. Make sure you go and search it on Google Maps. So my first question for you, Sam, really then is, tell us about your early, you know, footballing journey. How did you get involved in football? You know, where did it all start for you?
Yeah, so throughout sort of primary school and secondary school, I was obviously playing football, well, playing sport, really, and football was the main one. It was my passion. It was always something that I really, really enjoyed, and played for school teams and you know, played for grassroots clubs outside of school, and it was all the way through sort of my early childhood that I was just constantly playing football, whether, as I say, school or clubs, or, you know, out on the street and things like that. And as you know, as you do, you just start falling in love with football. And then as it sort of came to my final sort of year in high school, I was again still playing, but I was really passionate about sort of the coaching side. There was a few school teachers at my secondary school that I sort of really like looked up to, who was coaching the team at the time, and I just, that really started my passion for sort of coaching and wanting to do the delivery side of things. So sort of through into college, I did a sports diploma, again still playing for the college academy and things like that, but again the sports side of things really really I was passionate about that, really interested in it. And again, through college, I was coaching outside of the education part. Just doing some volunteering at, you know, the local grassroots club, and then ended up sort of again really enjoying that. Was doing a lot of sessions. As I say, it was just voluntary, but just to get a feel of actually what it was like to actually coach and deliver myself. And then I decided that's something that I would like to sort of be educated in further in terms of the coaching side. So I embarked on a degree course, undergraduate degree course at University of Central Lancashire. So sort of stayed local to you know, to where I grew up. And then did a 3-year degree in sports coaching at the University of Central Lancashire. Which took sort of the coaching and my knowledge and my passion for coaching to a level and an area where I never really thought would. I knew that I was passionate about the coaching and you know, the sports development side of things, but the degree course really, with its education, with its modules, with its level of sort of detail within coaching, took my knowledge and things to the next level, and that made me really, really, want to pursue a career in coaching. Just through the information that we were being given and the theory that we were reading, and we were going really sort of deep into the theory side of coaching and things like that through the different modules. And as I say, that just really intrigued me. So I was able at the time to try to put that information throughout my degree course into my coaching that I'd already sort of was still doing at the time. I was in the summer, I went out to the States and did some coaching out there just to try and put this information, that my degree information, onto the grass as much as I could, in any environment, in any experience really that I could get throughout that 3-year period. I tried to. So UCLan were a really, really good university for their sort of, teaching and the way what they taught you, but their support for a young coach, because at the time, in my third year of university, I was 19 turning 20, and they were really, really good at supporting a coach like myself who was really intrigued and passionate about learning and wanted to grow. I knew that I had still so much to learn and so much to improve on my coaching delivery side of things and my, the overall coaching side. But I had that passion because I'd had the experience for so long, and I knew that that's something I wanted to get into. So coming to the end of my studies, there was an opportunity to embark on a real sort of, you could say, scary, but also a really fascinating journey to coach out in China. And that was all brought through by University of Central Lancashire proposing and offering these opportunities out to its students. And I would sort of say to any listeners out there who, are quite a young listener, to really sort of take on those opportunities that come your way, whether they're, really, really scary, whether you're really apprehensive about those opportunities, I would just say go and do it, and you just never know what might happen. So that's what I did. I sort of took the opportunity of having spoke to, a lot of people about whether, I should go and do it. I was speaking to the lecturers, I was speaking to my family, my friends, other coaches, and everyone just sort of said, yeah, go, take the offer, because not every day you get, an offer to coach out in China. You never know what might happen. It might work great, it might not work, but at least you've tried it. So again, UCLan were great, and they were able to sort of allow me to go on this journey a little bit earlier than was originally planned, which again I'm really grateful for them for. So I flew out to Beijing in April of 2017, and I was only 20 at the time. I'd never left home before, because I was staying at home through university studies. I'd never been to Asia before, so going to China was this. Not only was it real, I knew that it would be a real sort of challenge on the pitch and in terms of the coaching side. I was really sort of apprehensive about going out there because I knew that it was a complete new start for me. So I went out there at 20, and again, China Club Football, who I went out there with at first, were really good, really, really supportive, in terms of understanding that I'm still, a young graduate who's fresh out of obviously university studies and still quite young. And there was a lot of support there, which again, I was really, really grateful for. I can't say that it was easy. It wasn't for the first, at least 6 to 8 months. It was really, really hard to adapt to a lot of things, especially off the pitch, in terms of the culture, you know, the language, the food, you know, the distance, even that the time difference between the UK and there was a major factor. Obviously, speaking to friends and families and things like that, and you know, there's a, you know, you might be it might be evening out in China, but then it's early morning in the UK. People are off to work, so it's really, really, you know, really, really difficult to try and speak to people when you want. You know, you can speak to people, but you have to really try and schedule it that in a way that's going to benefit yourself and the people you want to speak to. So yeah, it took me quite a while to adapt to coaching and life out in China. The life was a big factor, but also the coaching. Obviously, I'd only coached through university and obviously previously going to university, only coaching in English speaking countries. So going out to China and you know, coaching out there, my first session and you know, sessions moving forward, that was really, really difficult. But yeah, that's sort of a, you know, my sort of journey. But the decision to go out to China to coach and to sort of move my life out there at that time was one, you know, one that I will never ever regret. And I'm, you know, really, really glad that I was able to have that opportunity, and I took that opportunity on board.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Yeah, brilliant, mate. Really, really fascinating, and it puts a smile on my face to hear, you know, your journey, and you can just sort of tell the passion that you've obviously got for coaching, which is obviously what inspired me to ask you to jump onto the podcast today. And obviously, as the listeners will be picking up on from, you know, what you've just said there, particularly, you know, about Asia, that's obviously why we've decided to make this episode today, and you know, there's a lot of stuff to dissect there that we're going to get into this episode today. But one thing I want to ask you, as someone who's had a similar sort of journey as me, who's gone to uni, studied the sports coaching degree, and it's always a question that I have for people that have been to university, is how did that sort of 3 years change your thinking, not necessarily always as a coach, but as a person? And the reason I ask this is my own personal experience was I was very quite narrow-minded. So I was always, you know, for example, for me doing the FA badges, the FA tells me this, I replicate this, you know, this is what I think is good practice. And I remember sort of getting to that third year at uni, and suddenly, you know, it just completely changed my thinking of, you know, there's no right or wrong in coaching. There's so many, you know, different ways of doing something and doing a session, and, you know, how you might, you know, deliver that session, you know, the plan of your session, the sort of structure of that session. And it's something that, you know, I always find really intriguing, because I've worked in a lot of organisations where, and not necessarily a criticism, but there is quite a bit of narrow-mindedness of, you know, this national football organisation says this, and this means that this is the right way to coach and anything else is wrong. I've also been lucky enough to work in organisations, particularly, you know, being involved in coach education at university at Leeds Beckett, where completely different mindset to that, and maybe that's because it's a sports coaching course, not a football coaching course, and perhaps that's a debate for another day. But I do want to ask you, how did that sort of change your thinking? Was it a big impact? Did you always kind of have that thought anyway? It's, for me personally, it's just quite an interesting question that I'd just like to explore a bit further with you.
Yeah, really, a really interesting sort of area, really. I would sort of second what you said there about your experiences, really, in terms of, I don't feel like I'm a narrow-minded person, but the university course and the degree really opened my mind to, okay, coaching isn't just this, and it isn't just, like you, I think you mentioned there, black and white. It isn't just you need to do this and you can't do something else. You know, you have to coach this specific way. That wasn't, you know, anywhere near what they were trying to to teach you and educate you on. It was completely the other end of the spectrum, and it really tried to, you know, expand your knowledge and your mind as much as you possibly could on that degree course. And there was days that I was coming away thinking that, like, you know, I've never even heard of the this approach before, or this concept before, or I've never even thought about doing any of that within my session. And now I've got a toolbox of all these different things that I never even thought I would get, because I just thought before the university course was, okay, you know, coaching is like this, because that's how I was coached previously when I was playing in my early years. Okay, I saw the coaches coach me, so when I'm now on the grass, that's how I think I should coach as well. And that's where the degree course came in, because it really just opened that, you know, your mind in terms of the discussions, in terms of, you know, the actual content of each module and its differentiation, and how that relates to coaching, and then how that could be related practically on, you know, and even not practically, but even sort of, you know, yourself as a coach and things like that. So yeah, it just took my mindset really to another level, where I was so open to concepts and practices, approaches, theories, and with the people that were on the course as well, the other students, again, were from a range of different sports backgrounds, coaching experiences, coaching, you know, knowledges, duration of coaching, and again, that was quite good, because we could all sort of give our ideas, and they could give their ideas, and you know, you might pick something up from somebody, or somebody might not like your idea, somebody might really love your idea but expand on it, and then again, you're building up that toolbox of not only contacts but also, you know, knowledge and things like that, and again, it was just an environment that you could really really flourish in terms of, you know, your growth of coaching really.
You know, you sort of notice, well, the listeners won't know this, but I'm doing a lot of nodding when Sam's talking there, and the reason I'm doing a lot of nodding is because just such a similar, if not pretty much the same, experience for me really. And, you know, listeners of this podcast for years will know I've always sort of, you know, banged on about and recommended, you know, going to university, studying, you know, the topic of sports coaching is so fascinating, because as you say, you're not in a room with just football coaches, you're in a room with, you know, people involved in basketball, swimming, netball, handball, just, you know, tennis, badminton, all these different, you know, sports, different game types. You know, you've got invasion games there, you've got net and wall, you know, games there. And the sort of difference from doing a, you know, sports-specific course, obviously, for you know, myself and yourself, that's football, which is obviously incredibly important as well for that technical knowledge, for that sports-specific, you know, tactical knowledge as well. But the addition, I would say, from studying that sort of, you know, undergrad and eventually a master's for me as well, huge really in terms of, like you say, a toolbox there for, okay, how do I approach this session? You know, is there something I can do differently here? Can I, you know, use this theory, that theory, so on and so forth? So really, really, really fascinating, you know, to sort of get your take there, Sam, and your experiences. And that's one of the beauty of the podcast, really, hearing different coaches' experiences from different backgrounds. So really, really interesting and awesome to kind of hear a little bit more about yourself and your background and sort of, you know, your experience over in China. And as I sort of said to, you know, a little bit earlier on this podcast, that's really what's kind of inspired us to sort of sit down and do this podcast today. You've obviously, you know, just come out of that period now of, I think, just over six and a half years, something around that time of being in China. I've just done a year in Hong Kong, and I've obviously now moved over to Xiamen, you know, not too far from Hong Kong, but sort of entering second year and, you know, potentially a few more years out coaching here as well. And, you know, we, for the listeners, a little bit of context, we were sort of chatting in the pub over maybe one too many beers the other day, and sort of just sharing our experiences of, you know, the constraints, the difference in culture, sorry, how that maybe constrains your practice, you know, sort of different sort of constraints that you'd have that you wouldn't necessarily have in England or necessarily another English-speaking country such as America or Australia, for example. It's such an interesting dynamic out here, and certainly one that I think, as clearly you do as well, my friend merits a conversation on this podcast today. So,
the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Where I'd kind of like to start the podcast, and perhaps this might be a bit of a broad question to ask you, but the podcast is entitled, you know, An Insight into Coaching in Asia. So probably the first question to ask you would be, is in that sort of 6.5 years whilst you've been out in China, what are essentially the differences that you've sort of had? And obviously, I'm aware you've probably coached longer in China than you have in back home in England and obviously in America as well. But what are those sort of differences that you kind of picked up on initially, you know, particularly when you first started? And like you said, you were a much younger coach. But how was that sort of initial first, you know, 3 months to a year? How was that experience for you?
So the first initial experience was one that was quite interesting because, obviously, because I was so fresh out of my degree course, I went out to China thinking that the players would be the same in terms of retaining information, behaviour, football, understanding, passion for football. So I, when I was on the grass coaching and delivering the sessions, I just presumed that I should deliver in the same way, and I tried to really use what I had on the degree into the sessions. And I quite quickly found out that didn't work, and I'll touch on that in a little bit. But initially, the differences were the culture, so the way that people go about themselves out in China. I'm not saying that these are right or wrong. I'm just, you know, highlighting the differences between what I've experienced, obviously from living and being born in the UK to, you know, to moving completely to the other side of the world in a completely different country. So it, straight away, the culture was one. As I say, the manners of people in China are completely different. The way that people sort of just go about their daily lives, the way that they act, it's very, very different. I quickly found out it's quite a very, very, I guess, because of the amount of people that are there in the country, it's a very competitive culture as well. So everyone is trying to you know, we all like to be better, and we all like to try and be the best. But that is quite a very important part of the culture is to try and be as, you know, as best as you can every single day and every single minute. And then if that means that you, you know, are not taking other people into consideration to do that, then that's what they will do. Again, this is not that I'm saying it's right or wrong. It's just the differences of you know, initially being out there, and obviously again the language was a real difficult one. Even in a city like Beijing, there's a lot of places that speak more, well, I say more Chinese, but Chinese rather than English. You would sort of think that in a capital like Beijing, it would be quite, you know, English speak. It isn't. I think Shanghai is more English and more international than Beijing, so that might be why Shanghai has, you know, maybe more opportunity to speak English. So that was really, really hard. Even sort of going down, you know, going to the local supermarket, and if there's anything that you can't sort of find, then, you know, asking someone, the workers in English, where is your bread section, for example? They just sort of look at you with a puzzled face, and obviously you're on your own, and you've got sort of no helper, no translator. Your phone might, you might not have the translation downloaded out on your phone, because that's, I didn't, I don't, I should have. And again, you know, you look back and think, oh, well, why didn't I have that? Why didn't I have this? But I didn't have a translating app, because I sort of just presumed that I could get by with minimal English and you know, broken English, but I could sort of get by. So that was really difficult as well. And I don't know about yourself, since having been on the mainland recently, but I quickly had to rely on people so much. Can you tell me what this is? Can you explain this to me? Can you help me to do this? And I'm a person that does like to ask for help, and I will ask for help if I need it, but I like to try and problem solve myself first before I start sort of constantly asking people for help and relying on people. So that again was really hard. But the people I did ask, and the other coaches that were out there at the time who'd had experience, were really, really good in sort of helping, supporting. I couldn't have asked for, you know, a better set of people really to be there. And then obviously the people that came as well, who needed that support, but also again, really sort of stuck together and helped with the coaching side. So you know, that off the pitch was probably one of the two difficult, you know, really difficult things. Just quickly, it just popped into my head now as we're just talking about the language. Even like getting into a taxi. And sort of, you might have an idea of where you're living, but you have no idea about the address, and you can't get it up on your phone, and you're on your own because you might have left earlier, you might have been the last one to leave somewhere or whatever, and you're thinking to yourself, well, how am I sort of getting to and from, and how do I go about doing that? And what I will say to any sort of listener who is thinking about maybe going out to Asia or embarking on an experience out in Asia, an opportunity, I don't want this to put people off going out there. It's not easy initially, but you know, no country is, I guess, where they don't speak the first language of English. But I think from my experiences, if you give it time, things will work itself out, and things will start to calm down as you get used to your area where you're living, you get used to your workplace, you get used to your colleagues and things like that. It does start to get easier, and you start to then go, oh, well, actually, oh, I'm quite chuffed with myself because I managed to get myself home, or I've managed to get myself to a session without one of the lads helping me, or you know, something like that. And if you can see it like that, again, with that sort of open mindset and that sort of, all right, well, it is going to be hard at the start, then it will get better. And then sort of moving, you know, forward in China, the coaching is very, very different. As I say, initially I was treating it as a session that I would deliver in terms of my delivery style, and the way that I'd sort of planned my sessions to one that I would do in the UK and America, that I know would work with the level of kids that I had, and obviously the language. But that completely, you know, was apparent quite quickly that needed to be adapted and changed to meet their, you know, the environment there, and the type of player and the you know, the knowledge of football and things like that. So that was something that that I quickly found out, and again, that wouldn't have, in terms of the adaptation, wouldn't have been possible without, I think it would have, but it would have taken me longer to adapt if it wasn't for the personnel that I was working with and the broad diverse of people and coaches who some have been coaching much longer than me. Some had already been out in China a number of years. Some had been in other parts of the world coaching, so had that sort of overseas, you know, coaching experience, which sort of helped me off the pitch. But then, on the pitch, I was able to speak to them about how to adapt to coaching in a place where obviously, you know, football culture is very different to the UK. There's a language barrier. And again, similar to what we just discussed before about the university degree, I've now come out of a university degree with a completely different mind, and quite quickly, within 6 to 8 months, I've now got a completely different mindset that I never thought I would. So I can't say, I can't say that it was like another degree course, but it was. An experience that I thought, well, this is completely different to my degree course, and it's completely different to my initial coaching that the volunteer coaching that I'd done before college and through college. So I'm here now in China with a completely different mindset than I did at uni, than I did when I first started initially coaching. So, you know, again, it was this toolbox now that I'd sort of built up, it has got so much inside it that made my sort of path career in China a little bit easier, because I knew that this is what I would need to do to adapt. This is what I would need to, you know, do to change. This is what this session might need in China, but it quite potentially could not work in the UK, but for China it works. And you know, whether that's setups, whether that's intervention types, whether that's coaching style, your behaviour as the coach, so all these things were really sort of changed. But again it's that or the mindset that I would never have even thought I could eat, and I probably wouldn't have reached if I'd not been out there. So again, sort of to any listener, it's at first it's daunting, and you know, I doubt anybody else would probably say anything different. However, if you can just break through that initial phase, and things will get sorted, and you know things will sort of start to work themselves out, you will then really, you know, start to have a completely different mindset of maybe anything that you've maybe experienced in the UK or any other country, I think.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Honestly, absolutely brilliant to hear that, and sort of sat listening and smiling and nodding my head, because there's just so much that I'm resonating with. And, you know, as I usually do when I have these, you know, these conversations on the podcast, I'm often writing a couple of notes down that I'm sort of dissecting as you're talking there, Sam. And there's a couple of things that I want to go into. And a big one is obviously about the language. And that's something that maybe we'll sort of touch on a little bit later in the podcast. But what sort of struck me there, the first thing you say is, I've just come out of uni. I've obviously developed a certain philosophy, a style. I've got my toolkit. You know, I've got a certain way of coaching that, you know what, I've been doing this now for a couple of years through uni, and I know that works. And, you know, I've got my own justification of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. You know, one of the biggest things that they used to say to us on the course at Leeds Beckett, can you justify what you're doing and why you're doing it? And it's interesting for me, because it was exactly the same experience for me moving to Hong Kong. Now, you know, Hong Kong compared to mainland China, obviously everyone's probably, you would expect, brought up in the same sort of culture. Hong Kong, a little bit different. You know, you're given a team of 12 boys or 12 girls or, you know, 16 women, and you've got, you know, potentially 10, 11, 12 different nationalities there, right? But the sort of big culture that was very noticeable very directly in Hong Kong was, because it's such an expensive place to live, if you've got a kid paying for a program, or a woman's player paying for a program, there's already a certain level of expectation, because they may be paying, you know, four times or five times as much as what they're probably paid in mainland China. I certainly know that's, you know, what they were four or five times as much as they were paying in the UK. And it was very difficult for me at first, because I'd sort of come from two positions where I was the women's first team manager, a semi-professional club. The women's team wasn't semi-professional, but that sort of role allowed me to basically dictate how I wanted to coach. And rightly or wrongly, no one was going to turn around and tell me that that's right or wrong. And, you know, I'd often justify to the players, and I'd also had a role of head of football development, where again, no one was going to turn around to me and say, what you're doing is wrong. And, you know, the opportunity there was to sit down, speak with parents, explain what we're doing and why we're doing it. It's a little bit different, but this is, you know, these are the effects we think. And my sort of personal philosophy at this particular time going into Hong Kong was, the main thing that stuck me at uni was, if you're always talking to a player and you talk to them, you know, basically telling them what to do in a game, that's great, and you'll see that sort of short-term effects, and that player will probably have improved performance, and that's fantastic in that short term. But over a longer period of time, what you'll find is that player doesn't retain that information because they're not making that decision themselves. You're talking them through the game. And as soon as you take that feedback away, right, the player suddenly is, well, they're so reliant on you that they become a little bit clueless. And the thing that was very noticeable, and I remember sort of being told this through conversations, is that if you're not sort of talking all the time in Hong Kong, that's perceived as passive, right? And again, I go back to the sort of culture of how much money the programs are. That doesn't work in Hong Kong. So straight away, I'm now having to go against what I'd spent 5 years studying and believed in and knew over a long period of time worked. Wasn't straight away, big thing to point out, but over a 4, 5, 6 month period, I knew it, the longer term effects, because I'd done it. And suddenly now I'm having to completely change what I do. I'm having to talk all the time. And I absolutely hated it. But there was no way I was going to be able to stay in that job unless I adapted and did that. And that was the culture. So, you know, a bit of a long answer for me there, sharing my experiences. But I want to bring that up because I'm interested to know, what was it for you in Beijing? What is it you had to change, you know, to sort of adapt to the kids you were coaching, be that in a school environment, be that, you know, on a football pitch, be that during a game? What was it that had to change for you? It's something that I'm really intrigued to, you know, to potentially hear a little bit more about.
Yeah, so there's just really interesting to hear your experience home, you know, very close to the mainland, but things can be quite very, very similar, things can be quite different. So in terms of myself, I found it depended on the program that you were coaching on. So for example, there was a few programs like your after school programs. There were programs like your like development centers, development sessions, and then you had the actual teams, the league teams that were, you know, training to compete in competitive leagues, you know, every weekend. So in terms of the after school programs, again, that might be quite similar to the, you know, to somewhere else in the world. That in China, the after school programs are not consisted of players who maybe are interested in football that much. They may be just there because their parents want them to be more active. Their parents maybe want them to go because they can only pick them up later, you know, from school, and that's the only, you know, the only activity that they can do on that day to you know, compensate for that lateness pickup. It might be that the parents want the kids to be more active, and they just see a football session as a way to stay active. It might be that the parents want the kid to be in an English speaking environment from a native speaker. So I approach these sessions initially as I would do with any session, you know, trying to give the players a positive environment, learning environment, me, myself as the coach and my character being really sort of outgoing, really, you know, trying, depending on the age, whether it's the younger ones, you know, trying to be really sort of active and silly, so the players feel comfortable with being in that environment. You know, a little bit older players, just really trying to sort of get them active and moving. And with the younger ones, doing that meant that you quite quickly find it hard to gain control of the environment as a coach, because you've given them so much freedom to operate in and play in, because you're really silly and there's not really much structure to what you're doing. You then give the players and then, you know, the environment to be free, if that makes sense. But then with the younger ones on these programs that are after school, it's very, very difficult to, which I found, to rein them back in when you want them to listen to you and pay to you for the next practice, the next progression, the next activity. You know, so that was that. And I, as I say, initially I approached it just as I thought worked. It quite quickly in China didn't work, so I had to find a way to still be as positive and to be as outgoing and to be approachable, a coach, but also try to find a way to be, you know, structured and strict at the time that it might need it to be. And so that was quite an interesting part. And then the older players on those programs, again, might be there just because they have to be there to do an activity after school, and it's quite difficult then to motivate them and to make them active because they just don't want to do it. So again, completely different to the younger ones. So you have to find ways to plan activities that they're going to be interested in, and ways to speak to them that they feel comfortable coming to the session. And approaching you, and maybe they want to do some activity they really like, so they're comfortable to approach you. So then sort of the sort of opposite end of that spectrum, if you like, is the league teams, and that's very much quite different. I again approached it in a way that I thought would work, and the way that I delivered in the UK, thinking about the type, you know, the players I have and the type of player they are, and sort of trying to challenge them the best they can, whether that's individually or as a small group, you know, planning a session that sort of related to whether there was a game, related to the season curriculum, and really sort of following on that, and then again working out the session design and how that would be structured, and I say that my delivery in terms of you know, allowing players ownership of their own sort of decisions and learning, and sort of really trying to flourish in a positive football environment, and again that quite quickly was not the case, mainly due to the players not having or not being used to that freedom before. So, okay, at school, they might go to school and it's very, very regimented in terms of you need to be here at this time and you need to get that work done for this time. And if you don't get that work done, there's a punishment. And you know, I need to be here at this time and we need to go and do art class at such a time, and I need to go and do a ceremony at this time, and I have singing class at this time. It's very, very regimented, and when you're in those classes, I've experienced one or two sort of local Chinese schools, and it's very much sort of the teacher at the front dictating what the students learn, and then, you know, if you don't learn this specific thing for your exam, you will fail. So it's very much sort of do this, listen to me, I'm the sort of dictator here, and you listen to me. So obviously they come to your football training session and they're getting a completely different approach by somebody who they think should be that dictator. So, you know, just a little example, it might just be a warm-up or an arrival activity warm-up, and you might ask, you know, players to do something all together, or it might be that they're all being active at once and you give them free roam of the square or circle, whatever you've set up. And there's times where players have looked at me when I've finished explaining and demonstrating what I would like them to do as their warm-up, you know, and when I said, okay, we can play, we can go, and start, you know, we can start. I've had a group that all, they've just all stood there, and I'm thinking to myself, but like, I demonstrated it to you and I've explained it, and my translators then translated it into Chinese, and we're now still not moving, and nobody's doing what I've asked them to, you know, or shown them to do. And I think that's because you give them so much freedom that they're not used to having that much freedom. So that was something that I sort of had to rein down a little bit. And that was also apparent on the match days, especially for the parents. There was a few teams that I was involved in as the head coach there, and there was times on the side that obviously I would just sort of take a step back and just watch and assess and just you know, have a look at how each player is getting on in my team, and you know, not instructing, and maybe giving out the odd praises here and there, and the odd sort of instructions and the odd bits of information, but nothing like constantly commentating from the side and things like that. And there was games that we you know, we came out winners, and there was games that we came out losers. You know, that's football, right? So there was one time that we narrowly lost the game, and it didn't really count for, it was midway through the season, so it didn't really count for, you know, it wasn't the final and things like that. And a couple of my parents at the time from players who were in the team sort of approached me and was questioning why I wasn't dictating to the players, and they sort of said, well, if you'd have dictated and told the players what to do, we would have won the game. And I'm also, obviously I've got my university degree head on. I've got sort of, and this was not long into my journey in China. It was probably a year and a half or so. So I'm still quite new to the environment and things like that. And I'm trying to sort of explain that, you know, we've lost the game in the short term now, but for the longer term, your player will have a better sort of broad mindset and a better, you know, brain, because he's been able to make his own decisions and he's been able to experience that environment in an environment where nobody's constructed him and nobody's sort of you know, dictated what he does. And you know, okay, if he or she has made a mistake and that's, you know, not had a positive outcome, then that's fine. I've gone through that mistake with the player and discussed that. So next time in that environment, he or she can go, okay, well, yeah, and try and do it a little bit better. But trying to sort of explain that to somebody who's in it from a culture, and who's probably, you know, a middle-aged person who's been brought up in a very sort of like dictatorship sort of culture and things, was very, very hard for the parents to grasp and understand, because they're very much used to, I'm the coach, so I should be, you know, demanding and explaining what the player should do all the time. And again, that was something I really, really found hard to adapt to, because again, similar to yourself, Sam, with your university course, you're coming out of university, obviously on your master's as well, and knowing that does work and people do accept that way, and that way is really, really good for player development, player growth, player understanding, game management, all these types of things. It's really, really good for these players, and especially the younger players are really going to flourish, you know, in the long term. But trying to explain that to somebody who's from a completely different culture, who's not been on a degree course that we have, was so difficult. And again, trying to explain that to the translator, to get that translated the same way that I would, and the information that I want to pass over if I was speaking to somebody else who was a native English speaker, again, was that translated correctly? I'm not sure, because I don't know what's being said back into Chinese. So again, that was just something that was so, one, it was fascinating, you know, I'm going around asking other coaches and things who I'm working with. I'm saying, should I be a more dictator coach? Should I be a more, you know, autocratic coach in how I pass on information and how I sort of deliver and how I'm what I'm like on a match day? And again, then, you know, they're just they were telling me that what you've done is not wrong, and what you have said to the parent is not wrong at all. We just have to have that understanding head on us that we are in a country that's not our own country, that has different cultures and different ways of doing things and different views, and you know, that's how we have to approach it. So yeah, it was again really, really sort of fascinating to really, you know, try and adapt to those, well, experience those experiences and things, but also try and adapt as well.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Yeah, honestly, it's fascinating to hear how sort of the similarities in the experience, even though, you know, you're obviously talking from sort of Beijing here and I'm from Hong Kong, and that's two completely different, you know, Chinese influence, of course, obviously one's in the mainland, one's a special administrative region, but two completely different places, different cultures. Obviously Hong Kong is incredibly influenced, you know, by expats, by foreigners. Obviously Beijing's the capital of the mainland, right, you know, and it's just so interesting, that sort of similarity. I mean, my experience in Hong Kong, there is definitely a case of that, where I think players are so, you know, they're brought up in schools of, like you said, they're being directed. Whether there's as much in Hong Kong as Beijing, I'm not too sure. Maybe, maybe not. But I'll never forget, the first ever session I did in Hong Kong was with, it was with a U12 boys team, and they were team A or team one, if you like. And they were, you know, they were good players. They could play technically. They were proficient, right? And I'll never forget, I did a rondo and I put down four cones, and the players obviously automatically stand on the cones, right? And then you obviously have a player in the middle that's chasing the ball. That's a rondo. Now, I've done that at sort of grassroots level with players that are beginners, right? I've done that at, you know, the sort of JFL I was working at. It's probably the highest level I've worked with, you know, really, really talented players, right? I've done that from, the point I'm making is I've done that from a really high level and a bottom level. And when every time I did that practice in England, the cones were just known to be a reference point, right? No one stood on that cone. And I'll never forget this in Hong Kong. I'm watching, and again, these are good players, right? These are good players. And one of the players, like, makes a pass and it goes in between two of the players, right? And neither of them move. And I'm just looking at him. And again, this is the first session, and I just couldn't get my head around it. And I said, why don't you move? Well, the pass needs to come to me. That's why I'm still on the cone. And I went, lads, the cones are a reference point. Obviously, what I'm trying to teach you is this is a diamond shape, and diamond for X, Y, and Z, always for your passing options, blah, blah, blah. I was like, but why would you stay on the cone? And it was very apparent. It was very apparent immediately after that session that there is not as much creativity and adaptability, right? And obviously this is going out in England, you know, 20 years ago it would have been different than it is now in England, but Phil Foden, if you sort of watch his upbringing, he's obviously played on the streets as a kid, right? I don't know his family background, but that's why he's such a creative, adaptable player, right? And we're, you know, I've debated this a lot in England, is you're not getting kids on the street as much because of the influence on PlayStation, Xbox, blah, 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 right? Topic for another day. But that was very apparent in Hong Kong. Kids aren't playing on the streets because you can't play on a street in Hong Kong because there's 7 million people in Hong Kong, right? It's very limited football pitches. So kids aren't actually going out and practicing, very rarely. So that sort of, you know, to me, just basic movement on your toes, get ready to move if the ball comes, you know, step sideways. It doesn't exist. And you know, that was just, to me, it was like a massive shock that, okay, again, I was similar to you. I used to love sort of setting up like a box, and I'd say to players, right, do what you want for 5 minutes, rather than messing around shooting in a goal and all that sort of stuff that would wind me up. Jump in this box, practice some skills, have a 2v2, 1v1, do what you want within reason. And I used to love watching it, all the sort of creativity, you know, elements to do, regardless of their ability. Hong Kong, you couldn't really do that. And And a sort of second point to go into there, again, just sort of linking to what you were saying, is, you know, the teams I was taking there, I was trying to do that approach where, you know, I know why I'm not going to tell the player what to do in every single moment of the game, because I'm thinking long term. And the culture there is it's all short term. Because again, the programs are so much more expensive. So the sort of judgment of how is my kid gaining success is if they win. Right. And, you know, and no one said this to me. Right. None of the player, the parents were great with me. Right. None of the parents ever said this to my face, but I could feel it, that when I didn't say anything, I could just feel that sort of eyes on the back of my head. Right. And I could see, even if we'd win games, and it got to a point where I was having to like just talk all the time, talking for every moment of the game. And honestly, Sam, I hated every single second of it, because even though that was short term, you know, we would win a game 3-1 or 4-2 or, you know, 3-0, whatever, and the play would be great, it was killing me, because longer term, I'm sort of thinking, is this going to help them? If that's an adults team, a women's team, a men's team, a U18s, 21s, even 16s, 15s, I get it a bit more. But, you know, when I was doing these under 12s, I was like, don't really feel comfortable with this. And ultimately, that's, you know, why I've decided to move on from Hong Kong, because I know that culture isn't going to fit with how I've been brought up, right? And that's okay. You know, I'm not saying that the way I do it's right. I'm not saying the way it is in Hong Kong is wrong, right? That's the beauty of coaching, right? It's a completely difference of opinion. But it's so interesting to me that, again, you know, make the point quite clear, Beijing, Hong Kong, completely different, two massively different cultures there, but similar sort of perhaps regimented childhoods. I've never been to Beijing. I wouldn't know, but I would guess, you know, capital city, I imagine, is there a lot of kids playing on the street? Maybe not. And that's so interesting for when you're coming from England and, you know, similar to me, I'm sure we've all had to go and work in those poor areas on uni where you're working with kids that, you know, are rough and they're taking the mick out of your accent or your hair, right? But there's so much adaptability and flexibility in their movement because they're just used to playing on the street. And you know, I remember going into a boarding school coaching, completely different.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
All right, so just to kind of, you know, sort of get a close to this segment then. What I also find really interesting, what I've sort of noted down here, is that you've spoken about, you know, having to adapt in a session, right, in a sort of school environment. And obviously the nature of the jobs over here, you know yourself, you know, it was the same for me in Hong Kong, the same for me now. There is an element of your football coaching that's within a school environment. Now, what's so interesting, my experience so far here compared to Hong Kong, was everyone speaks English in Hong Kong, whether it's their first language. Even as a kid at 5 years old, they can all speak English. They're all fluent in English and Cantonese or English and Italian, English and French, whatever. So you don't have to slow your voice down, right? There's no issues in terms of behaviour management. You'd more likely do a session like you would back home in the UK. You know, you're talking there about sort of struggling to rein them back in. I've now done 3-4 sessions, and if I can give you an example, I've done a session today in a school that's a multi-sport session, and for 45 minutes, really good structured session. You sort of give them a water break, and those kids are just, you know, moving around, picking hoops up, swinging a hoop round, throwing catching to each other. And to get them back in probably took me about 4 minutes. It was incredibly difficult because there's maybe 3 of them that are fluent, but they're not really fluent. They can just speak basic English, right? And obviously kids are clever. They play on that. They know that you're not speaking in Mandarin. So, you know, they're going to, with respect and, you know, if you pardon me French, take the piss a little bit with you, right? And that's it. I can see already what a fascinating, interesting challenge that is. And that's a challenge I've today never experienced before, right? You never usually have that issue. You know, and even if I was to raise my voice, try and use the behavior management techniques that I've used Hong Kong successfully, in America successfully, and, you know, in England successfully, I can already see that isn't the same case. And, you know, at the minute, not really experienced that too much on the actual coaching session on the grass. But certainly when we're talking about, you know, that difference in language, and perhaps that's something we might want to say for the next segment. But, you know, how do you deal with that experience? You know, how is that experience for you, and how did you adapt? Because, you know, when you've got a translator, for example, I can already see that you're reliant on that translator to basically behavior manage, right? Like you said, are they translating everything you're saying in terms of your coaching points, your activity description? It's so different. And I've always been someone who wants to keep those explanations to a minute tops, coaching points to a minute tops, because I want to move around as much as possible. Already here, that's not going to happen, right? You've got to give at least 3 or 4 minutes to make sure they know what they're doing, and that is a fascinating challenge. So I'm not sure if I've given you a question there. As I usually do, I kind of start blabbering on, so apologies for that. But, you know, take what you can out of that. How was your experience of that? How do you find out, you know, how do you sort of deal with that challenge, I guess?
So, again, really, you know, really interested to hear about your challenge and your experiences when you're still sort of quite new to coaching on the mainland. But I think for me, initially, I got very frustrated when I couldn't bring the kids in, because I knew that I do have those skills to be able to, you know, be strict when I need to be strict, but to be really sort of open and to be really, you know, engaging and things like that when I need to be as well. So when I couldn't rein the kids in, it was very, very difficult. When I'm speaking to players or whatever, and they're not taking on board the information, they don't do what I've demonstrated or shown related to the activity. Initially, I got really, really frustrated. I was sort of banging my head, you know, to other, speaking to other coaches or the translator, why? And I think it's something that us as coaches, being out in Asia, especially in China, we have to sort of take a step back a little bit and really assess the overall environment that you're in, and also that includes yourself as a coach. Have you, in your planning phase, have you taken that into consideration? Have you taken every possible situation that could happen into consideration in your sessions? And at the time I didn't, because I didn't know that. But I think it's not something that coaches can, you know, should get frustrated at, because it's a completely new, different culture and environment. I think what we need to do is what I sort of ended up doing, after speaking to people and things like that, was take a step back, assess the whole situation. Why is it happening? What can I do to affect it? What can the session do to affect it? Is it a wrong activity? Is it not engaging enough? All these types of things. Is it that I haven't briefed my translator properly, so the information being related in Chinese is not correct? Is it that the kids have had a real bad day at school, that they've been stuck inside most of the day because it's been raining or whatever, and they just got so much energy and they just need to be let off a lot of steam, and it might be a more chaotic session than you sort of might want due to, you know, factors out of your control. So it's for me, in terms of the, you know, to adapt to a sort of environment like that or a situation, I think we just need to again, that broad mindset, that open mind, head on, take a step back and just assess. And then the next time you go, or the next time you deliver at that same, for the same, you know, group and the same place, you can really try and take more factors into consideration.
Yeah, brilliant. Really, really good answer there. And what, you know, I'm sort of picking up on is, I like that saying of take a step back. And even though I'm now a coach of sort of 9 years, almost 10 years, you know, sort of like a similar time frame to you as well, sometimes that can be really difficult. So, you know, I'll give you an example. Last week I'm on the grass and I'm doing a U12 girls session. And very well behaved, very good attitude. I think one of them speaks a little bit of English, but I was in control of that session, right? And so many parents watching, I couldn't, within reason, care less what anyone would have thought, because I know it's a good session. That sort of Saturday afternoon, I'm doing a session with a couple of boys that you can sort of see are sort of different characters, not necessarily like the best behaved. And that session straight away isn't going how I want it to go. And I'm always envious, even though, again, I'm 9 years in here, I'm still envious of parents watching, and I'm almost like in my head panicking a bit. Well, this isn't really going as well as I'd like it to go. And, you know, that's such a good point of, hang on a minute, just, you know, take a step back. Sometimes easier said than done, but take a step back, reflect in action, I think is the sort of academic term that I remember sort of that, you know, the uni spoke to us about, you know, and try and work out, you know, why is this happening? You know, what's the reason here? And, you know, and also perhaps just recognise that, you know, in England, you know, I think how we're brought up, and I don't know if it's the same for you, but if you've got kids running around and not necessarily listening to you, it's quite obvious you're not in control. And in England, that's bad, right? But is that bad in China then? One of the things I noticed in the international schools, obviously more so in Hong Kong, is that teachers are very relaxed. It's not as strict. So I'm doing sessions and going in, being incredibly strict, as I would in England, because that's how I've sort of been used to it. And I know that has success in England. Hong Kong, it's not working. And it's not working, it's not working. And probably sort of 2 or 3 months in, eventually I realised that, what am I doing wrong? I don't think it's the activities. I think it's the fact that I'm being overly strict, and eventually I become a bit more relaxed and lenient, and suddenly I just have a lot of success in the sessions. Suddenly the sessions are easy because the kids have bought into that. So it's honestly just so fascinating to sort of hear your thoughts there and you know, your experience. So